Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of the Cinetech Show. This is a there is a long lost episode 2 that has been done before, but may come out at some point.
At some point.
Technical difficulties, thanks to a microphone. Anyway, so we're here. We're going to talk about. We're going to recap our NAB 2017 like, predictions. And the basic recap is we got it all wrong.
Absolutely wrong. So, completely wrong.
However,
yeah,
I don't have to eat a cake-shaped shoe because Apple did not introduce anything Pro.
Oh yeah, no. And in they're going to talk about introducing Pro. You'll see something in 2 years, and it'll be just too little, too late again. You know where they're chasing after the. Chasing back after the market that they're losing, that they already had. It's ridiculous.
Well, anyway. they literally said the exact same things before the trash can came out. Oh, we didn't forget about the Pro. Oh, we didn't. We're going to come out with something new and amazing. Right. Turns out, no, not new. Well, I mean, it was new.
It was a trash can. Decent, it wasn't amazing.
But yeah.
It was just decent.
Very interesting. You know, they kept saying how great the thermals were and how good this was. And new design and airflow. Turns out that was all bullshit. It was all lies.
Because for a lot of money. Expensive lies.
Yeah, they maxed out their thermal capacity.
Okay.
I mean, they made it so small.
Yeah, well, it's super tiny. It's supposed to be the portable, like, 4K editing kind of machine or whatever. The big top-of-the-line trash can. It just didn't work.
Nope.
Yeah, I think they'll be too little too late. I think that you've got companies like Google. Dell even is killing it with their laptops. I think they're going to take over the market for pros over the Apple.
Mm-hmm. Well, the best Mac Pro you can buy today is a 2012 12 core with the new Titan X.
Terrible. For 3 to 4 times the amount of money that you could get that on a comparable PC. Oh, well. Apple.
I mean, it's used.
Yeah.
Apple.
Yeah.
So, a lot of those predictions were like, oh, this camera, that camera, what are they going to do? What's going to happen? Turns out, not much.
Nothing. Like, well, I'd say what camera-wise, we've got, let's kind of round up, because we don't have the list in front of us, but because we didn't have to make one. It wasn't that much. It was the Sony A9.
Sony A9, full which frame. Is
popular for a lot of people. It's be a pro body. It's as a photographer myself as well. It's pretty exciting to see that no blackout and really great, you know, viewfinder, etc. And I think people are going to wait for the S series of it or the R series of it before fully jumping into this, you know.
Right.
They did miss 60 frames per second on that, the boat. If they had put 60 frames per second on that, I think it would just have annihilated everything else out there.
Gotcha.
You know, the 1DX Mark II has better specs than that, has better specs than the Nikon D5, and it gives you 4K 60. That would have been amazing. They would have sold a lot.
So one of the predictions we did get right on that long lost episode,
yeah,
and by we I mean Ferguson,
yeah, so they wrote him. Right.
He got the USMC, something like that. It's not the Marine Corps.
No,
it's just a block with an A7S2 sensor, HDMI out, a data port for you to kind of like figure it out.
Sure. And that's it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they were showing it into 3D rigs and VR stuff, sure, and all that nonsense. But still, just, you know, it's a block with a sensor that's really good. And
that's really all you need.
Records to micro SD or SD cards.
It's kind of what cameras are anyways.
Yeah.
It has a computer brain with a sensor. You look at a RED, it kind of just looks like a little computer box.
You know, I don't need a handle. I don't need this. I just need a box.
Yeah. Most of the time.
So anyway, that's an interesting thing.
That is an interesting. Past that, the only other thing I saw for a camera would be Panasonic hinting at putting out a C100, C300 level
FS5 competition area.
You know what it really felt like was that like an AF100 or AF101 replacement from back in the day. I don't know if you remember that camera. Like the GH2 came out, and then they had the same sensor in the AF100, right?
A completely worthless camera.
Yeah, right. But if you have their technology that they have, what, in the Varicam right now, and you put that in, or even the GH5 sensor that they have, which is beautiful, put that into something that's usable.
It better not be Micro Four Thirds.
See, now the interesting
thing... If it's Micro Four Thirds, I think it's dead on arrival.
See, I don't know about that.
But there's Metabones now. There weren't speed boosters when the original AF100 came out.
So yeah, you were stuck with you were. That's right. So you've got Metabones now that will take you close to the Super 35 framing and the fact that you can do a true anamorphic 2-time on it. That would be still interesting with Micro Four Thirds.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? Yeah. So, and I worked with, I shot GH2s, GH3, GH4. It would be interesting. None of their lenses are that from Panasonic, but if they're going for a professional market, I would imagine it would be a Super 35. It'd be interesting.
What if it's an E-mount?
That'd be even more interesting. I think that then you'd be compatible, a lot more compatible with being able to put different types of lenses on there, which would be exciting. Sony would be a little pissed off, but, you know.
It could be EF as well.
Yeah, EF. I think that...
It's not PL. I mean, you can see that from the silhouette.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out. What I think is more interesting is we're going to find that out in Cinegear. And what I've noticed this year is you know, that kind of sums up our camera thing at NAB. You know, we may be wrong and look at a couple others.
Well, Canon. AJA released their huge new... Oh, wait, no, they didn't. Nope. There was no... Which is...
Yeah. You know, I think people were hoping for a new Blackmagic Pocket. You know, that a lot of people were disappointed that the Pocket wasn't there.
I mean, the Micro really replaced the Pocket, but it still
is ergonomically not really. You don't have a screen. You don't have the ability to kind of even see what you're doing unless you attach something else. And I understand the place for it. I don't think it's the same camera, though. It's a great image, but I don't think it's as usable as something that as the Pocket was. But, you know, there's disappointment there. But I think the bigger thing is we're seeing a shift from NAB to Cinegear. As being a more popular venue to almost start unveiling or be at for camera-related items or cinema-related items.
I think it really kind of comes down to is NAB really is a broadcasting convention. Yeah. You know, there's a whole wing they're dedicated to transmission and head end and all that stuff that like
the one that I walk right through. Yeah, right.
Nobody really cares about.
Sure.
Well, I mean,
they're the people that are there. The that people would that listen are there to for this that specific. For sure. Yeah, sure. None that would listen to this, I'm sure. But it's a huge venue. Being able to stay in LA, being able to say, hey, you know what, I finished a little early, or you know, I got a half day, I'm going to go over and pop in and check out Cinegear, is I think also what's making it popular. Plus, you're in the back, you know, a lot of Paramount. It's a little cooler.
Mm-hmm. I think the real thing is they and I think that they finally learned this. You can't just announce a product and not deliver.
Right.
So now they're going to announce it when it's ready to be delivered.
Yeah, I think that's kind of it seems to be standard across the board now, and especially, you know, I'll see when. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Cinegear we see something from Blackmagic talking about a Pocket or something like that, or ready to deliver, or Panasonic. They said what it should be sometime in 2017. So that I think it's like Sony does. They announce and deliver.
Right. You know? I mean, so the tease at Panasonic was this new camera will be shown
at Cinegear. They had like a white cover over it this time. Mm-hmm. So interesting.
And it's, you know, I mean, in that lineup, it was, you know, there was the Vericam 35 or the Vericam Full, and then the Vericam 35.
Right.
Vericam
LT.
LT. This thing, and then the GH5. That's a huge gap.
Yeah.
Between
the LT and a GH5?
Yeah.
So that says to me 10,000 or sub 10,000, around 10,000 camera, which is FS5, FS7 competition.
Right.
Blackmagic Ursa Mini, you know.
Probably in better than the FS5.
Oh, yeah. I would say so. If you're going to have this, even if they brought in the Vericam kind of sensor, that... You know, man, if you brought the Vericam sensor to that level with having that base ISO rating, you'd sweep up, I think, as Panasonic. So we'll see. I think even with a GH5 sensor in it, which is a great camera, I really want to kind of get my hands on it and compare it to when I shot with the 4. I miss it. I miss the reliability of Panasonic. Not to jump all over Sony, but, you know, I start shooting on a smaller Sony for half an hour and I'm overheating. Never had that with Panasonic, you know, five different cameras that I had from Panasonic, I've only ever had one problem. So yeah, that kudos they're solid, to them. They're workhorses. Solid, man. And their batteries are great. They last forever. So
I just ordered two D54 batteries. Oh,
there you go.
For my TV Logic monitor.
Ah, so the monitor we wished we had on this last short film.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Always make sure to have a monitor, folks.
And if your camera doesn't work, get it fixed.
Yeah, there's that. Moving on, we've got a lot of lenses, I think.
I mean, yeah, this is
the biggest thing we need
to talk about. 2017, NAB, the year of the lens. I mean, really, that's...
The year of the, not only the lens, but may I add the full frame kind of VistaVision going to last you for the next decade lens.
Right.
Right? Not really. Are there any even non-full frame lenses we're going to talk about here?
Well, the anamorphics.
That's about it, that's though. About it. But everything else, interestingly... is full frame. Now I'm gonna ask you real quick before we get into each one of these. I know you. We've talked time and time again about it, and I know you are a big fan of Super 35. With this, is that saying that we're all starting to move towards a full frame sensor? Are we gonna see more? Seeing that Super 35 kind of going out and full frame being the new norm?
I think you'll see it in places. I don't think it's going to replace normal day-to-day filmmaking. And the reason is because just the sheer size of full frame.
Right.
You are dealing with, you know, your depth of field gets so small and can be a real challenge.
Yeah. But also with the coinciding of the autofocus being able to, you know, coming into cinema cameras in the next, I'm talking next 5-10 years, right? So if I make an investment in, like in these lenses, for example, I'm planning on using these hopefully for years and years, right, and years and years. So I just find it, I think that they're forward thinking in that sense too of, you know, the having the ability to interchange onto all these new full frame sensors. Maybe they're seeing something I'm not seeing come down the road.
I think it's going to be part of everything going forward. I don't think it's going to be, we're going to move to full frame and that's going to be it. Or VistaVision or whatever you want to call it.
Sure. I think just like, you know, you still have the option to shoot on film. You still have the option to shoot on digital. It's right. Just an option.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, granted, I love the fact that all of these cover full frame. You know, so, nice. You know, my, you know, I'll probably mention this every single podcast. You know, my Epics are larger than Super 35.
Yeah.
So if I want to get an Angenu zoom, it's not, you know, it'll cover 7K. Maybe 7.5, but it won't cover 8. It won't
cover 8.
Or it won't cover 6 on the Dragon.
Interesting. Okay.
So you know, already, you know, you see these sensors that are creeping above Super 35.
Sure.
And I think that's one market that's really going to be hit.
That makes
you might
sense.
Not go all the way to full frame. You know, you're talking about, you know, full frame being like a 43 millimeter image circle.
Right.
As to pose Super 35 being around 30, 31.
And so my giving Dragon being at 32. Just giving a little wiggle room, right? So allowing it to, you know, allowing sensor manufacturers to expand a little bit and not have to worry about lenses.
Right.
Their lenses not.
So compared. I think we should start kind of talking about cool things that, so what we knew before this was Sigma was coming out with a still, you know, a Cine Prime set.
Right.
T-Stop has different ranges.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the 18 is.
Is it still?
It's not 1.5.
It's not. Is it 2? You're going to hear clicking in the background.
Yeah, that's just one up. Oh, again, something we should have thought of.
Yeah, no, I thought they were all 1.5. They could have gone to 2 for, well, it's the new 18, right? They just announced that one. Or no, they just announced a 14, right?
They announced a 14.
Yeah.
T2.
Okay.
And the 135 is T2.
Okay.
So,
but still T2 at 14 and T2, it's beautiful. The,
well, they say high speed, prime set. So let's see. Well, oh, it's a 20 millimeter. That's
oh, 20 millimeter
1.5.
Okay. So 14, 20, 35, 50, 85, 135.
So they don't have an 18, but 20 is
20 is close enough.
Yeah. They have the 18 to 35 zoom.
Right.
T2.
Right.
Which doesn't cover 8K on the Helio.
No, it does not at all.
It does at 20. So that, you know, that full frame 20 is.
Might be worth going to.
But that's, this lens set, like on paper, just super impressive.
Very impressive.
And, I mean, impressive in the fact that The art series looks really nice for still lenses. Fantastic.
Some of the best.
So all mechanics, solid, glow in the dark, you know, markings.
Still no price.
There is a price.
For
the stills.
Okay.
Or the, not the stills.
What do I know what you mean? For the primes.
For the primes.
Okay, wait, drum roll.
Drum roll. $3,500 each.
I assumed. Okay, so about $500 less than their Zooms.
Right.
That's still a good price.
It's not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
That's that's less than the, well, I guess most of the new ones that are we're going to be talking about today.
It's less than all. So it's the cheapest.
Yeah.
Outside of Rokinons.
Yeah, sure.
We didn't even talk about Rokinons because they didn't come out this year, but they're out there.
Rokinon, Zine. You know, Zine I think frames. Would be the closest to these in terms of, and how much are Zine? Zine are still like.
It depends. You can get them pretty cheap.
Can you? Okay. You they're know, just not as good optically.
Right. You know, I've seen them come around $2,500.
Wow. Okay. So $3,500 for a brand new, you know, beautiful Sigma Prime with, like you said, with glow-in-the-dark markings even? Or
yeah.
They have, that's nice. For $3,500, I think they'll sell a whole ton of those.
I do too.
Yeah. And you'll just see them rented out all the time. You know, the closest I would say past that, right, you have Zines for a little bit less or something like what you have, the CP2s.
Yeah.
Which in terms of price, but now you had Zeiss come out with,
well, I think, yeah. So Zeiss came out with the CP3
right.
And the CP3 XD. So that has the extended data.
Sure.
Which is really interesting and really cool.
You're going to have to explain that a little bit more to me. I'm a little confused on that one.
So there's a couple of different things about it. So they signed on to the consortium that does the Cook, iData.
Okay.
And so they've got the four pins in the back, which does the eye data, which is, you know, focus distance, you know, T-stop and what that is.
Right.
And lens data. Then they've got a port that's extended data. So it's a whole bunch of other new stuff.
Okay.
That they've then worked with Lockit and another company that makes a like a live grading software.
Okay.
To be able to send that lens data and everything to that app.
Interesting.
Wirelessly.
Okay.
So it seems, I mean, it seems like, you know, so you could do real time.
I was going to say for real time stuff.
Yeah. So you, you know, real time lens distortion removal and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Not going to lie. I mean, if you, I would probably not need that ever, but it's pretty cool to see. Maybe I would. I don't know. I don't find myself in an environment like that. You know, but
I mean, that's, you know, if you're shooting for visual effects, you might want it.
Sure. If you're shooting maybe live event that you're able to live distortion, I guess, get rid of.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. But I mean, the CP3s,
distortion isn't bad on those lenses anyway. So
yeah, I'm sure you'd be fine. The CP3s in general. So we found out we had thought originally we're going to be comparable to the Milvus line, but it's actually the same optics, isn't it?
It is. As so it's the same optics since the CP2s.
As the CP2s, just better coatings.
Different coatings, new housings, new focus gearing.
Smaller. On a lot of it. Yeah.
So you're going from 114 millimeter front down to a 95 millimeter front.
That's significantly smaller.
So the 114 is like the master prime.
Yeah.
Level. So I mean, those are, you know, so they're basically more compact.
Compact prime. Because the compact primes were the least compact primes that ever.
Well, compared to like, you know, old super speeds and standard
sure,
speeds.
Sure, they are definitely not compact.
Which, you know, on those, they were so compact with your, iris gear.
Right.
Or your focus gear in the back. Like, you couldn't get a follow focus on a lot of those.
Those older lenses? You know, well, compared to these guys.
Depending on, you know, what you're using and.
So, you know, I wonder, you know, now I will say coatings can make a big difference. I know from like old still lenses, you know, coming from like 60s, 70s or any vintage lenses, any time there was a new set of coating, especially in Zeiss, I will say it was a decently big deal. So I'd be interested to see, even though it's same optics, they had to have liked it enough, right? Even though it's same optics, putting in a different coating. And the new design might change some things. It'll be interesting to see if there's much of a difference. I feel like as a CP2 owner, as yourself, no real point to upgrade.
I don't think so.
Not at all.
What they
maybe a new buyer.
What they kind of talked about with the new coatings is that it's more contrast.
More contrast.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, you know, the flares are going to be less, you know, you're going to get...
You don't get that vintage look. It's just a more clean, right. better, newer... These are new lenses. You know, yeah. These are that feel that you want. Very clean image.
So I think, you know, for me, this is going to be a great time to pick up some used CP2s.
Absolutely. There's going to be people dumping those for yeah. some reason, especially a couple of rental houses that will want to dump them for CP3s or yeah. something, you know.
But I mean, this, you know, so now you can get CP2s for $2,000, $2,500 on the used market. That's
just really great.
That's a really great price for Zeiss lenses.
Absolutely.
You know, so if a producer calls you and says, what kind of lenses do you have?
Full set you of can Zeiss cinema lenses.
Zeiss cinema lenses or Rokinon cinema lenses.
Yeah. I'm going to take the Zeiss every time. Right. Even if you said Zine, you know, right. No. It's the Zeiss. Zeiss. People know Zeiss. And because they're great.
And I think, you know, some of which is I've read about on the internet is they say the same about Sigma. You know, our producer's going to know that Sigma means quality. Super sharp quality. High
end. Not yet. Not yet. But, eventually. You know, I did, you know, it just takes some time to get word out on the street. I think that in the photo world, I mean, I know in the photo world, Sigma took everything by storm, right? So the 18 to 35 proved super popular in the cinematography world because, well, hell, it's an amazing lens. But in the photography world, you have, like, recently they put out the 85 millimeter, and it was besting the Otis. So that's incredible for something that is around $1,000. It's besting one of Zeiss's top portrait lenses. You're going to get that kind of technology coming over to, and probably Zeiss besting lenses. They're going to better these CP3s, I feel, in overall this looks like if we compare them, it's taste. It still comes down the end of the day. Both very, very clean images. But I think after a while, a little cheaper, Sigma is going to, maybe if they put what I think they put into these cinema lenses, yeah, they're going to be a name to be reckoned with, especially against Zeiss at looking, what are we looking at for some of these CP3s? Like about $6,000? Like this is before 40, the transfer.
Yeah, so right? So 43.90.
Okay.
For the, you know, your standard focal lengths.
So still you're still saving close to $1,000, right? Yeah. And with going Sigma.
Yeah. And with Sigma, if you do the EF mount,
right.
You have a lot of that lens data.
Yeah, you do.
So now you're, I mean, you know, granted the Zeiss lens data is going to be totally different
and
than EF.
And
but
you have T1.5.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Sigma, just give them, when they start hitting this next year, give them another 2 to 3 years, they're just going to be on every set you're going to go to. You're going to see from small to large, people love the optics. They're sharp.
So I think with the Sigmas, you're going to really start with the owner-operators. You know, right. People buying a set, using them on their own projects, and then, you know, going out with a DP.
Right.
And then you'll get into other people wanting to shoot on them. Being a big rental item.
I think so. I think owner operators definitely going to be, it's finally, I guess, accessible. I kind of, you know, it, I, maybe not. Maybe it's just kind of the new kid in town even.
I think so. Sigma. I mean, you know, there were a lot of people that bought the Zine line of lenses.
A lot of people jumped on that.
They were cheap.
Yeah, you know? But I didn't like the look of it. You know, maybe that's it's personal taste or something. I would say
the 35 was nice. Cast, like, was it? Back in the day, you know, when Rokinons first started coming out, I bought the 35.
Sure.
I used it on so much stuff.
On the Zine or the regular Rokinon?
Just the regular Rokinon 35.
Yeah, and it's the same optics, right?
Right. But I just, none of the other lens line really I liked.
I enjoy, I mean, for what they are, guys, I mean, if you have like between $1,000 and $2,000 to spend on lenses and you have the ability to just grab a set of Rokinons, they'll work great for what you need. They're not amazing, but they are... still 10 times better than having to deal with still lens all the time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Know? For sure.
So for the price point of regular Rokinons, I'm all for the regular Rokinons, the cine lenses. But the Zines felt like, okay, that's the same optics, similar to what Sigma's doing, right? Same optics, but, you know, the Rokinon optics weren't amazing to begin with, where the Sigma optics were amazing. They are amazing. Much sharper than the Rokinons were. So I think transferring over that lens, you know, level of lens over to the cinema lens, for around the same, how much are Zines new compared to what I can get them used?
I want to say they're $3,000 new.
Right. So for $500 more, I'll get a Sigma. This is zero question.
Right.
You know, Rokinon's great and all, but I'll stick with the regular cinema lenses for myself. But have you used the Zines?
I haven't. I have the Zeiss.
Yeah, you no need
I thought about it.
Yeah.
You know, I thought about, you know, testing him out, but I just didn't see a need.
Yeah, there's no need. The Zeiss's kick their butts, in my opinion. Yeah.
So. And the Sigmas will do even better.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, as long as, and as people complain about that look, and they just want something different out of it. It's a very clean look. You know, do something with it later. Yeah, if you want that other look, go vintage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Go find some contact Zeiss somewhere.
So the Zeiss CP3s.
Yeah.
There's a lot of mixed kind of feelings about them.
Yeah.
One, I think they're a great evolution to the line. That's my opinion on it. So they've taken a bunch of lenses that sort of had, you know, disparate f-stops and, or, you know, t-stops, f-stops, barrel lengths, all that stuff, and kind of, you know, made it into a streamlined set.
Oh, uniform.
So in doing so, they got rid of the super speeds, at least for now. So everything is T2.1
okay.
Above 18. So 15 and 18 are T2.9.
Okay.
Still, meh. Mm. Considering you can get, you know, a 20 millimeter 1.5 in the Sigma.
At 1.5. Yeah, that's a big deal.
Two stops.
Yeah, it's two stops, not just one, where you could really kind of negate that later. But
right.
At 18, they should be at 2.1.
And it's a brand new lens designed from the ground up. It's still T2.9.
It would be my least used lens, and I like that focal length,
which is why I bought the GL Optics version in the 18-35 from Sigma. Yeah. That's my 18,
right? You know, and that's a nice option to have for, you know, if you are shooting Super 35 a lot, you know, like if you're shooting in red, shooting Super 35 a lot. I think that's even a bigger one for Sigma, is the fact that you can have these full frame primes. Or still get that similar look from their zooms, which, mm-hmm. you know, you're not going to get from Zeiss in that price range.
Yep. So one of the downsides is they're all T2.1.
Right.
Or 2.9.
Right.
So a lot of people are like, geez, you know, it's 2017. Do I want to
invest that much money in primes? A T2.9?
Yeah.
You know, it almost... Well, but, you know, like S4Is get rented a lot, right? Or minis, and the minis are 2.8s.
Yeah.
Across the board, right?
Not as much.
Yeah.
I mean, they're another tool in the box, but I don't see them being like a major thing that people are shooting on.
The minis?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people like T2 and below. You know, T2, T1.5, that not...
Because at a certain point, you might... You're going to start looking at zooms.
Yeah, I would. I would start looking at the Easy line, the Ingenue Easy. I mean, you can get, you know, anywhere from, what does it end up being, like 21 or something like that to, you know, equivalent
full 22 frame. 22 to 60.
Yeah.
T3, full frame full coverage.
Full frame coverage right there.
And 15 to 40.
T2.
T2.
For Super 35. That's a lens that'll last you for a really long time. Because if I'm going to do T3, I better have a zoom range.
Right.
You know?
I mean, even that ginormous red 1885
is
T2.9.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, it's cheap.
Right.
But it's also, it's going to get the job done.
It'll get the job done. And that's something just like the Ingenues. At that point, I would go Ingenue and just have those forever. They would mm-hmm. be my bread and butter lenses most of the time.
So the good thing about the Zeiss is their all new focus mechanism. So they've actually taken they've combined the focus design from the Ultra Primes and the Master Primes.
Okay.
Into these lenses. So they're, you know, you can focus with a pinky and it also stay when you don't touch it.
Interesting.
So that's like, you know, and it's all a 95 millimeter front. Those are the big things. About the lineup.
Across the lineup, they're all 95 millimeter front. There's mm-hmm. no real difference.
Yeah, even the 100 and the 135. Nice.
Okay.
You know, whereas now, you know, I've got the 50 macro, which is just insanely large. And
that thing just, it feels like you're attaching a boat to your camera. Right. That thing is huge.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of times when you hear people say, oh, I hate the CP2s, they hate the 50.
The 50 macro or the...
Just the regular 50.
Oh, okay.
Because the regular 50 is... It's crap.
It's not good. Is it optically crap?
It's optically crap. That makes no sense. It's not... You know, it's not a good lens. A lot of chromatic aberration. soft. So
50's got to be one of the most commonly made lenses. Like, yeah. Anyway,
which is why I bought the Macro.
Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, I bought it off of charts, right? So I was looking at charts.
Yeah,
and I chose the Macro off of charts. Turns out it was the right choice.
Sure,
but you know, it was one of those weird like gambles.
Here's a debate for you then. You obviously use the Sigma 18-35. Have you used any of their art primes in the past?
I haven't.
You haven't. So 18-35, you know, optically. I would almost wonder if you were, your CP2 owner, used them for a long time. If you were to be buying a new set right now, you have still the option of CP2, CP3, or the new Sigmas. Which would you go with?
I'd go straight to Sigma.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I think it's just kind of everything about that lens, the sharpness, the micro contrast is a little bit better. You're saving money.
They're small.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I think it's a 95 front.
Yeah, still, but they're smaller than the other ones. And you're getting a massive savings when you just buy them across the board, right? You know, thousands of dollars saved compared to the Zeiss.
So you do, I mean, you do have issues. You know, I hear the focus breathing is not great.
There is that. Yeah, focus breathing, kind of like the Macro is not great. The 50 Macro, right. We found out randomly. We're like, whoa.
Yeah.
But it's a Macro. You know, that makes sense.
So I think a lens set that really deals with focus breathing well is the Tokina Cinema Vista line.
Okay. I haven't seen anything really about the Cinema Vista line. So let me know a little bit more about
it. So they announced previous to this, I think they're showing off the 25 millimeter this at this NAB, as well as the 18 millimeter prototype.
Okay.
So that line, 1.5 across the line.
Primes.
18-85. Covers the full frame.
Okay.
It is, they are larger than CP3.
Okay.
So 114 millimeter fronts. So the same as the CP2s. So they are larger. They are bigger. But zero focus breathing.
Zero focus breathing. Now, is that worth $1,000 to you? It might be.
I think it's another tool in the box.
Sure.
Again, I think that is not going to be nearly as popular as the Sigmas.
No.
Or the Zeiss. You know, it'll still be.
It's like the Pentax to the line of other cameras.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Oh, they're still over there, aren't they? Tokina's. I mean, they're 11-16. Tokina. That's great. Their lenses as of this past couple of years have been outstanding. So I'm surprised I hadn't taken a look at these.
I mean, it's similar to Sigma, right? So that were they, you know, they used to make cheap lenses.
Yeah, I had a few.
I mean, that was my first Sigma. It was 24-70, and it was cheap and crap.
Yeah,
but it worked.
It was kind of soft. It worked. You know, we had a 12-24, super fisheye wide and fun. But you know, that was kind of it.
But then I got the Canon 70-200 or the 24-70,
and you saw the light. Yeah. It was light years better. Yeah. But I think that their optics, both of them, obviously improved to that point. Mm-hmm. Sigma came out, you know, first out of the gate just swinging with that 50 art series.
Right.
But the...
So the Tokina doesn't have a really a prime still set. So I don't know if these lenses are built from the ground up.
I would imagine. I was kind of confused that they were primes because they've always been the zoom people.
Right.
You know, I'm intrigued. I'd love to see how they come along. I wish them well. I hope it's great. You know,
but yeah, I know.
For $4,500, they better be great.
Yeah, Phil Holland was posting, and he was shooting a lot of, you know, on the VistaVision Red aerials with them.
Oh wow! Okay.
So he's had good things to say.
VistaVision Red aerials. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd want in the air. I wouldn't be sweating at all trying to move those sticks.
Right. So then you go up even higher in price. This is a big jump. Right?
This is
Cook S7s.
Cook, yeah, S7. We're jumping from that 45. Well, let's say we'll jump from the Zeiss top end here at around $6,000 to $7,500.
Yeah, $7,500 for the XD
top
135.
135, right? And then we are jumping to an average between 18,000 and 23,000.
Somewhere in there.
somewhere in there.
Because that's the price range they set for the S7. Somewhere now, between the S4 and the S5.
Now, Cooks in general, I think most people love that look, love that Cook look. Yep. And the S7Is are finally giving you a full frame VistaVision ability, right? Mm-hmm. So no longer hampered, but you can. So now would the will those fit on you like?
No, the S5s will.
Would they not do your cover? No problem with your 8K? Would they still?
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know either. Just a random question. I don't know if they would cover your 8K or not. But the, obviously these being full frame would cover your 8K. But the, having, obviously the price range coming from, $7,000, which is, I think, kind of like you're really your top for an owner operator to buy.
Right.
At $7,000, a lens would give you a heart attack or a divorce or one of those.
To go to 22,000?
To go to 22,000, it feels just like just like other Cooks, it's a rental house
item. It's a master prime.
It's a master prime. It's a rental house item. It's your choice of paint, that you want to paint with. And it'll be a beautiful lens. I saw some stuff shot with it. As always, beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Just never going to be able to afford to buy one, but I hope to shoot on it soon. I think that on your 8K. So we wanted to say multiple times per show, right?
Red
Epic 8K.
So looking at this Duclos Lenses image circle database chart.
Oh, interesting. Nice.
I love that you have that
just kind of off to the side.
Oh, yeah. It's always available. It's a database, yet it's printed out.
It's printed out, right. Yeah.
So it looks like the S4s. Mm-hmm. On here, between 34-35 millimeter image circle.
Okay.
So at 32, so that's going to cover 8K.
Okay. So I think really they're looking at VistaVision, or if you get the A7S2 kind of thing, you want to put it on there, or any of Canon full frames, any of those.
Those will go on the Alexa 65, I bet.
Oh, Alexa 65, of course. I'm thinking too small.
That's where a lot of these are going, right? So these are gonna
Alexa 65 is the new Marvel camera, is the new everything Alexa.
Your top end is gonna be either the Panavision DXL,
right?
Red VistaVision,
right? Which is that,
or the Alexa 65?
Alexa 65 being a bigger option right now, but we'll see in a year or two,
right?
A bigger option for major films.
I think that you see Hawk coming out with 65 lenses that will cover that. And so you see those big lenses that are moving there. Leica just announced those aren't up here.
Those on our aren't list, up there. Yeah.
The new Leicas.
Well, are you talking about the M mount Leica? I know Leica was doing a couple different things.
Yeah. Go ahead and talk about the M mount.
Yeah, the M mount one I saw was that Leica is kind of taking the champions of their M mount stills lenses, like even the 0.95 Noctilux that they have, the 50, and they are rehousing them into stills lenses. So you kind of have that Leica M look, which a lot of people love. It's they're Leica lenses for a reason, rebuilt into these newly housed lenses for cinema. Very nice. They're not going to be cheap. Leica lenses themselves for stills aren't cheap. The Noctilux, you're looking at $6,000-$7,000, right? So they're already outrageously priced. So, adding a little bit more to have a cinema lens, sure. I'm sure it'll do great. I'm interested to see how it works and looks on something. They're going after kind of the red market and stuff like that on a red. But what are the other Leicas that you were
talking about? So these are the Leica Thalia lenses.
Now, you tell me about these.
It's a complete lens set for the Alexa 65.
Sure.
And the, VistaVision. They cover a 60 millimeter image circle.
Wow. Okay.
So full frame is like 43 millimeter.
Right.
So this is going to cover, that's darn near medium format.
It is, right? I wonder, is this looking also for the future of IMAX Digital and stuff like that?
I'm sure it is, right? Yeah.
So, because IMAX film in general, I think, is going to start moving, besides Nolan, is moving out the other way. But aren't they working on or have an IMAX Digital coming out?
Lord maybe. Knows. I mean, you know, I think the Alexa 65 is...
It's pretty much there.
Pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know, and then Vista Vision is a little bit smaller.
Just a little bit. Yeah. So. Yeah, made for the Alexa 65. The closest I will get to an Alexa 65 is maybe this year at Cinegear. I'll walk up and touch it and my credit low, you know, will yeah. score will lower.
Oh, you can put one on a Steadicam arm and then dance around.
Dance around with it and watch it snap off and fall. Yeah, that was always worth one.
I love watching that.
I panic every time. It's a terrifying thing. I've been to that booth before. That'd be a terrifying thing to watch. Yeah.
Love that video.
Yeah. Cinegear. Come out to Cinegear, guys, if you yes. haven't been. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. So, you know, so you've got basically $20,000 a lens for the S7.
Right. So never going to buy that myself. Right.
You know what you could do with $20,000?
What could you?
You could buy a set of the new Orion Anamorphics.
Interesting. Like a full set.
A set of three.
Well, that's a full set for Anamorphics. Yeah.
40, 65, and a 100.
Which is equivalent to what? 20, 35-ish, and a 50?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, it's enough to shoot a movie.
Absolutely.
I mean, most movies, you know, if you're shooting on a Lomo Anamorphics, you got three lenses.
Yeah, you don't really need much more. My lens bag, even if I have a rental of five, I'm grabbing for three most of the time.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's Dan Keynes from who he started Paralynx.
Yeah.
Who then, you know, sold it to Vitech Group.
Sure.
So it's his new venture.
I'm in. That sounds very
brand
cool.
New lenses, brand new glass, brand new everything.
$20,000 for a full set.
$20,000 for a full set. Taking deposits now.
Well, of course.
It's like $8,000 to deposit all.
Well,
three.
Because they're going to have to manufacture stuff.
Well, yeah.
Right. So, and they want to make sure you're serious about making a full set of lenses, you know, $20,000 lenses. Now, I haven't seen anything shot on them. Do they have anything out? Any footage for them?
They do, yeah. And they're actually at NAB.
Okay, yeah. How is it comparing? Is it like a vintage look? Is it that cleaner SLR Magic kind of Anamorphot look? What is it?
Cleaner and SLR Magic Anamorphot doesn't jive with me.
No, you don't like it? Well, because it's soft.
It's soft. It's distorted.
You just don't like that look is what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, their anamorphic lenses, just their wide angle was so fisheye.
SLR Magic?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, I don't know. I'll find out at Cinegear.
Okay.
but these, you know, on paper, these look amazing. In the videos that I've seen, they do look amazing. T2.
Nice. No, if life would allow me to shoot everything on anamorphic, that'd be fun.
Right.
You know, corporate videos, small interviews, you know, it would look amazing. And 20,000 would be fantastic. I think you're seeing a lot more go that route, you know, bigger movies, everything shot.
Well,
on
I mean, if you think about what else you can get in that anamorphic range,
right.
You know, you're looking at, okay, so a set of Lomos. Right. Sure. You might be able to get, you know, Lomas are $10,000 for decent ones.
Per lens.
Kawas, they're 14 a lens. They're getting up there.
Do they have?
So, in fact, PS Technic. So, I haven't really, I tried to dig a little bit into this. Sent them a tweet. But
see if they, nothing back yet.
Huh? So, they seem to be making new Kawa anamorphics.
New. So same like lens design or same, you know,
so they say internals. It's, you know, they're listed as Kawa Anamorphics, but then they say their glass is their new Evolution Series glass.
Okay. So and design they make wise, but newer glass.
So it might be, but
I
but
love
again,
the look of Kawa. I think they, you know, I saw those recently on, you know, me perusing Vimeo or something for like a Ursa Mini Pro thing. And I saw they were just out messing with some Kawas on it and it just looked phenomenal, you know, out of my price range, but phenomenal looking, you know. But
those are 14,000 euros a lens.
So you're talking S7i territory.
Yeah.
You know,
those Orions seem really, I mean, you well, know, the, I SL, think that's what's so the win. SLR Magic really interested me because it was $20,000 for a set of three.
I've been trying to justify
And they were 1.3s as well.
Yeah.
Which would be great for my 8K sensor.
Yeah. that Epic W8K?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, because it would use almost the full sensor, and you know, get the 2.4 to 1, out of that sensor.
Right. You know, I think the SLR Magics are really promising. I liked the look. You know, I did some research on them. I haven't had a chance to play with them, but the that rangefinder was interesting to be able to focus, because that was a huge issue with, you know, having mm-hmm. two places you have to focus essentially. But being able to focus almost anything with that rangefinder was interesting. Problem is it softened like you put anything in front of a lens. More stuff you add in front of it, the softer the image, the more, you know, degrading to the image quality it becomes. And it just got softer after a while for people. I still feel that's a Mark One product. You know, I think that SLR Magic themselves is still a company that needs to prove a lot of things. You know, they're getting there. They're doing some good stuff. But as a serious competitor in the market, I don't think quite yet.
No, I think that, you know, somebody like Dan Kanes, who's, you know, got a track record of making a product that's...
Who knows the hands to shake, and it, because he's been here doing great products.
And just, I mean, just looking at the photos of this thing, it's like, this is well built.
Right.
You know, it's solid. It is not a fly-by-night.
And it's intelligently priced to a point where rental houses will pick up a set of three and you'll finally have anamorphics we can go rent for a decent price.
Right.
Put it on and convince a producer that you want to, or a director that, hey, we can shoot on anamorphic, man. And really give that kind of look to it. I think you're going to subtly see a lot more anamorphic commercials and shows being done because of that accessibility. And hopefully you'll see other companies follow suit with that, you know, down the line, five, 7 years down the line, where you see smaller broken on anamorphics, right? Something that, you know, along those lines where it's accessible to the everyman.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if there's so now you have companies out there that have proven that they can make optics and quality optics.
Yeah.
Now it's going and saying, okay, so what else can they do?
Right? Sure.
You know, you can take Sigma. Can Sigma make an anamorphic lens?
I would love to see a Sigma anamorphic lens. I think that would be a huge seller for them. But, you know, again, 3 to 5 years probably. See, mm-hmm. I would say 5 for something like that. Let them really get settled in the market and start to see it. But something like Orion, that reminds me a lot of like Red, right? You know, when he went from Oakley and came and made Red, another successful product. You mm-hmm. know, but this is at least still in the same industry. You said he was it Paralynx?
Yeah, Paralynx.
Yeah, that's a big product. You know, that's quality product too. So I'm excited to see if he's putting his name on it, to see what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the other things that I noticed outside of lenses, it's the year of the lens.
It is the year of the lens.
Was Bright Tangerine.
Yeah.
Came out with Alexa Mini and Red DSMC2 modules.
Interesting.
So, you know, with the DMC2 from Red, it is a, you know, it is very modular.
You know,
you get the brain and you have no way to power the camera, no way to see anything coming out of the camera.
This might be why you like the smaller Blackmagic.
Yeah.
You're maybe, already used to this. So like,
it's a box and I got to put a bunch of crap on it.
Yeah.
So
make it work.
You know, the cost of the camera just goes up because, you know, you're $1,700 for basic IO
all the time. Yeah.
And up till now, there was no small light module to get audio, pro audio into the system.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of the stuff that I do, I just want to record audio to the camera.
So you know, much simpler.
It's an interview. You know, I just want to record audio to the
camera.
That's
why the Ursa Mini Pro came along.
On the Red One.
Or Ursa Mini in general, just to have the XLRs.
Yeah. Exactly. On the Red One, they had mini XLRs.
Okay.
And
something.
And there were four of them, four channels. And everybody was like, oh my God, you didn't have full-size XLRs. And there's this huge, you know, stink, right?
Sure.
And so then Jared said he learned his lessons on mini XLRs. But then on the next camera, he put 1/8-inch TRS jacks, tip ring sleeve. They were still balanced inputs, phantom power out.
Right.
And then in the DSMC2 line, you get a stereo input. And it's like, this is a handycam from the 90s.
Absolutely.
Like, why am I not having real audio?
Right.
So they made
on a very real camera.
Right. They made the Red Volt Expander, but it was almost the size of the camera.
Right.
And it had XLR inputs.
But full it's size. Almost the size of the camera.
Almost the size of the camera.
Right.
And welcome back. We just took a little break to check in some rental gear.
Yeah, it's worth it at times, you know. And but we're back. We're talking, where were we? Bright Tangerine?
Yeah, Bright Tangerine has their new prototype. module.
Sure.
IO module for the DSMC2 cameras.
Right.
XLR inputs.
Very needed.
I see an antenna on there.
Interesting. Now for what? Like Wi-Fi or for...
I don't know. I'm guessing it's a Wi-Fi booster.
It would make sense.
So the camera internally has Wi-Fi.
Right.
So it's an antenna for that, I would say.
That would make sense.
Helps with full control.
Absolutely.
Also, at that booth, the Bright Tangerine booth, they're showing off hypercharge batteries.
Okay.
Fully charged in 20 minutes.
No kidding.
So they've got 130 watt, like a 45 watt.
How many V-mounts. Charges can you get out of it? Similar.
Oh, amount. Yeah. It's the same huge cycle, actually.
Wow. Okay.
So
yes.
With built-in, looks to be built-in D or P-taps, depending on your
whichever point of one view, you want to, yeah.
As well as USB in the battery itself.
Interesting.
So you can, run your transmitters or,
forget
your
these phone. Lenses. Why weren't we talking about the battery before? That sounds fantastic.
Well, yeah, it totally does.
That changes the game for Red, for Airy, for Blackmagic, for
If you think
documentary
about,
shooters.
Yeah. For, I mean, if you only need, three batteries instead of six.
Right.
That's a huge bonus.
Well, three batteries instead of six, you can probably charge some of those at the 20-minute thing, probably on some solar stuff if you're out and about. It's the ability to not have to charge for what? How long does a V-mount take to charge fully?
Right, probably an hour.
Hour and 20 minutes, something like that. So let's say you cut remotely 45 minutes or an hour off of that charge time. That's pretty huge. You don't have to bring in, four, five, six batteries all the time.
Right.
If you can recharge within 20 minutes.
And it looks like their, I wasn't sure. It looks like their website, it has, their charger has three ports on it. Maybe four.
Even better. Four at a time.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Are you saying charge four batteries at one time or?
Well, I'm sure each one takes 20. Sure. It's probably, it doesn't charge them all simultaneously.
Well, maybe not.
So, like my Red charger, it'll charge one, then the other. But okay. You put two on there.
Sure.
So you can go to bed and have two in the morning.
See, I didn't realize. See, all this time I would charge those batteries and be like, why the heck is this one taking forever? That's why.
Mm-hmm. Also, with most lithium ion batteries, you have, it takes a certain amount of time to charge 90%.
Right.
And then much longer to do the last 10% or 20%.
Right.
So you can, quick charge up to a certain point, pull it, put another one on.
And still get a decent amount of battery life out of it. That makes sense.
Yep.
Sounds pretty cool, though. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Hypercharge.com or something like that.
All right. I'm going to take a look at that for sure. Yeah. I think
that's it.
I think that's it, too. I think, we've covered...
These are just the new lenses. These aren't like the lenses that are out there.
These aren't like the lenses that we're like even using or.
Well,
or,
right.
Yeah, these are lenses that we're going to see in the next year or so.
Well, my go-to lenses right now, if I'm shooting corporate interviews, anything like that, I just use my Canon zooms.
Yeah, most of the time, most everyone does, it seems.
24 to 70, f/2.8, 70 to 200.
Yeah, 16 to 35 when you need it. Right.
Yeah. And then movies, I'm shooting Zeiss because I have them.
Yeah.
Unless I want something specific.
Right.
But I think my next, looking at what I'm missing, it really is that cinema zoom.
It's
that to be able to shoot all day on a single lens,
mm-hmm.
not change your focus, not, all those little bits and pieces, change your follow focus, change this, change that. Change your matte box.
You almost end up changing your shot as a result of you not wanting to change out your lens if you're running and gunning so quickly, change the composition of how you're shooting as a result of God, I just don't want to go back and get that lens. Because I know we were shooting a short film recently. We were out on a lot of locations, out in San Francisco a lot. Kind of what you're bringing is what you're bringing,
Right.
And you don't want to have to leave stuff in the car. You don't want to have to go back to the car. So you have to run really small. Something like those ingenues or any of a smaller cinema zoom like that just would have been super valuable on a day like that, especially the focal lengths that you have with those ingenues. We could have sat on the easy one or two or whatever that is all day.
Right.
And not had to move. Now we're shooting on a DSLR at that point, but still that would have been a very helpful tool, I think, to move
22
us along.
To 60? That would have all day.
All day. That. All day. We didn't shoot anything out of that, did we?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, no, we would have sat all day on that lens. Probably the whole shoot almost on that lens.
Right.
And not had to really think twice about it. Really, I think still a smart investment. I think we're going to see even more with CinemaZooms. The existing ones, I still am tempted by an FS5 or an FS7 just for the stupid Fuji zooms because look so great. And they're such a great price point that that will also help push that market quite a bit. So we'll see.
Well, excited. I think, you know, especially with CineZooms, you look at the Ronin 2 announcement and they are showing it with, you know, Alexa Mini with a big CineZoom.
Well, that Ronin 2, I think, looks like the size of a house, so we'll see. I mean, it's gigantic looking, but I'm sure it's not that weighty. It's very, very cool looking product. Coming from two Ronin users, right? So Ronin M and Ronin MX. But
you put you put an Armor Man or a Ready Rig on that.
It'll go all day. You know,
for although it does look really big.
It looks huge. I'm
way bigger than the Movi Pro.
Way bigger than the Movi Pro. Almost laughably large. I'm there's got to be a reason behind it. Obviously you're putting cinema zooms. You're putting bigger ones on there. They seem to also be going for a bigger camera market. They had, you know, not to keep going on the podcast, but they had the Movi XL that maybe we can talk about coming up. They just announced those bigger guys that are getting big, like the bigger Gremsy that they announced, that you're going to have these large, large cinema cameras being able to be held by those. But Ronin 2 just seems like they got kind of confused and going after the bigger market. I don't know. It's huge. Right. I'll have to stand next to it. I'm 6'1", you know, 250. So that's going to look, if it still looks huge next to me or you, Thomas, who's even taller than I am, then we'll see. I just think it's...
what I like is it's not a replacement for the Ronin that I already own.
Right. Not at all. No, it's a totally different product. And I think if you're going to run and gun, the Ronin 2 is not, you know, run and gun without somebody trying to shut you down. Run and gun with no permits. I'm at a place. We're just a student film. I'm way too old for that. But we're just a student film. Yeah, the Ronin 2, they'd be like, get the heck out of here. Ronin M, they might...
That's where, like, the new, like, Tilta little Gravity G1 little handheld unit.
Those, because you look like you're a tourist.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, right? But, you know, and you won't get bothered by that. People think it's just kind of a cool product. I have yet to be bothered for my Ronin M. People just think it's a cool product. You know, it's a cool gadget. But having the ability to have that one-handed operation, like the Pilot Fly, like the Zune Crane, all those one-handed ones coming out, or what was the Tilta one that they just put out. That's, I think that's a decent game changer as well. Not for large cinema cameras, but for your quick run and gun shoots, your 6500s, your, you know, mirrorless cameras, you know, I think that they're huge, a big game changer for that.
All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up here.
Yeah, I'm going to keep talking if I don't.
Next time we'll come back caffeinated and focused on a single topic.
Right, and no rental gear check-in or something?
Maybe.
Hopefully. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you mean like that Epic W?
Oh, yeah. If somebody wants to rent that Epic W, if you ever want let me know.
Absolutely.
RadiumPix.com.
Nice.
PIX.
Take care, everyone.
Later.